This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Jeff Halper, an Israeli campaigner for justice for Palestinians.
Since 1967, more than 24,000 Palestinian homes have been demolished in the occupied Palestinian territories and Gaza by the Israeli forces, bringing untold misery to countless Palestinians. Jeff Halper has led a campaign against the abuse through the organization the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, or ICAD. As ICAD witnessed the brutalities of the occupation, it expanded its resistance activities to other areas, land expropriation, settlement expansion, bypass road construction, policies of closure and separation, the wholesale uprooting of fruit and olive trees, the separation barrier wall, the siege of Gaza, and more.
Now Building Bridges is pleased to host in studio ICAD's Jeff Halper, an Israeli Jew who fearlessly criticizes the State of Israel and has, as a result, been arrested many times, including recently after he sailed into Gaza on a relief boat for a discussion of ideas to end the occupation altogether and for a free, free Palestine. Jeff Halper, welcome to Building Bridges.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Jeff, why don't we begin with, from some it seemed to be a revelation, but apparently Al Jazeera News Service has introduced its own transparency unit that is akin, it suggests, to WikiLeaks. And right now there is much to do about what they're calling the Palestinian Papers, which are issues of presumed concessions that the Palestinians were willing to make on land and East Jerusalem towards an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement. Now, the Palestinians say that really the concessions alleged in the papers are a fraud, but why don't we begin by some comment from yourself? Why at this time are these things being released, and what is your perception of them?
I think we're at the end of any pretense of a peace process. And the Palestinian Authority has lost all legitimacy and all reason even to exist. So I think what comes out of these leaks, that the Guardian and Al Jazeera have put out, is a kind of a situation where, you know, you could say a curse on all your houses. In other words, it comes out very clearly that the Palestinian Authority, with Abu Mazen or Abbas and the negotiators, have really sold out the Palestinian people. I mean, they were willing to give up all the settlements in East Jerusalem to allow a lot of the major settlements in the West Bank to remain and really, in a sense, create a situation where there is no viable Palestinian state. And I think there's going to be I don't know if the Palestinian Authority is going to survive this, because I think they've lost all legitimacy anyway, and this is like the final blow maybe. And hopefully, I don't think it'll be a bad thing if the Palestinian Authority collapsed. That pretext that there's some kind of Palestinian authority, somebody to negotiate with, that there is a peace process will finally be ended for good, and then we can get on with dealing with the occupation in its naked, raw sense. Secondly, I think it really shows that Israel has absolutely no intention to negotiate, no intention to allow the establishment of a viable Palestinian state. Here the Palestinians surrendered, basically. And Israel said, we appreciate it very much, but no thanks. You're still not giving us enough. And certainly the idea that there's no partner for peace, which is what Israel's been trying to press all these years, has been shown to be not true. On the contrary, the Palestinians have given up more than, I mean, like Saeb Erekat, one of the negotiators, said, I have nothing else to give up. And still it's not enough for Israel. And third, I think the United States comes out very poorly. Because the United States comes out, first of all, as Israel's advocate, as it's all often been called, and very patronizing and condescending towards the Palestinians. You know, Condoleezza Rice said things like, "If the Palestinians, if you don't give up a claim to Ma'ale Adumim," that's a huge settlement right in the center of the West Bank. If Ma'ale Adumim remains Israeli, there is no viable Palestinian state. It divides the country. It prevents movements of people. It isolates the rest of Palestine from Jerusalem. It's the most important settlement.
Condoleezza Rice says to the Palestinians, if you don't give up the claims to Male Adumim, if you don't let Israel keep Male Adumim, you're not just not going to have a Palestinian state. I mean, treating them like children, not even taking them seriously. So I think, in a sense, these Palestinian papers are very revealing from the point of view that there is no peace process, that there is no good faith on the part of Israel or the United States, that the Palestinians, if they're not collaborators outright, they're certainly so weak that they have no leverage whatsoever. And we've got to end this facade of a so-called peace process and get on to really dealing with ending the occupation.
Now, even before the intensification of settlement buildings that has just started after the breakdown of negotiations, there was so many settlements in the West Bank. Does this mean that a two-state solution is not viable at all?
The two-state solution, which is in fact, a super pro-Israel solution. You know, it sounds on paper, because most of your listeners aren't familiar with the maps. I mean, you can't know everything. The two-state solution sounds good on paper. Here's the state of Israel and alongside it a Palestinian state. What you don't see is that Israel remains on 78% of historic Palestine, whereas all the occupied territories, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, are only 22% of the country. So we're asking the Palestinians that are today half the population of that country, and if refugees return, even some refugees, they'll be the majority, to accept a state on less than a quarter of their historic land. And the Palestinians have said, okay. You know, they've really swallowed. They've bitten the bullet, let's say, and they've said, okay. But now Israel says, no, we're not going to give you that 22%. We're not going to give you anything because we want the whole thing. And we're going to keep building settlements. We're going to create facts on the ground that simply make our presence so massive and so permanent that there's no pressure that's going to come, certainly from the United States, that will force us back to the 67 lines. And therefore, I think the two-state solution is absolutely gone. The one-state solution that I support isn't really on the table yet. But I think that Israel is the one, and this is the point we have to keep making, Israel is the one that has made this country a binational reality. It's Israel that eliminated the two-state solution, not the Palestinians that accepted it more than 20 years ago. And therefore, if we begin to move to a one-state solution, I think it's a good thing. I think we have to blame Israel for the fact that the two-state solution that's a pro-Israel solution is gone. But I think there's going to be a lot of struggle before then because we have to get past this, again, this facade that there is a peace process that somehow Hillary Clinton is managing that is simply indefinitely creating a situation in which Israel's able to build settlements, continue to strengthen the occupation, but there's no end to it because Israel and the United States can keep delaying any resolution of the conflict for another 40 years. And we've got to get past that and end this Palestinian Authority, end this facade of a peace process, and then begin the struggle of saying, all right, now where are we going? I don't think it's clear exactly where we're going. I mean, I don't have a solution to pull out of my sleeve, but I do think the two-state solution is gone.
Jeff, there was again an announcement. You've already answered this in a way, but it should be perhaps punctuated, where there was a suggestion as though, and of course the way it's couched in rhetoric in the media here is, my goodness, they're going to give 50% of the West Bank. That'll be the territory for a Palestinian state. Yay, 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 50%. That number sounds so good. We've been so enculturated with that. So the comment there is the same, that it's another propaganda mechanism and certainly nothing more in terms of anything concrete, a real contiguous, meaningful space for people to expand, grow, and, for me anyway, reclaim their historic land rights.
I mean, there's a whole kind of disinformation sort of a thing. The impression that's left by Israel is this is all a matter of territory. So if we give them 50% that's better than 40%, 80% is better than 70%, 90%. It's not true. There's no relation between the territory they get and sovereignty and economic viability. And the example I use to help people make the switch, the issue isn't territory, the issue is control. Think of a prison. Think of a prison. In a prison, if you look at the blueprint of a prison, the prisoners own 90% of the place, 95% of the place. They have the visiting areas, the living areas, the cafeteria, the exercise yard. You know, the prison authorities don't need 20 or 30% of the prison to control the inmate. All they need is 1%, 5%. I mean, how much they have the walls around. I mean, how much territory is that? You know, cell bars are zero territory. You get a few corridors, a few cameras. In other words, you can control the inmates. So even when Israel says we'll give them 95% of the occupied territories, the question has to be what's the meaning of the other 5%? And that, I'm saying, that is the equivalent of the prison. That's what that 5% fragments the Palestinian territories. It prevents them from having borders with Arab countries. It takes away their water. It takes away their basic resources. It takes away Jerusalem. It takes away their airspace. And it really leaves them, okay, they get 95% of the territory, but it's sterile territory that leaves them with nothing viable and nothing sovereign. And so we have to begin to think not in terms of territory all the time, but in terms of controls and prisons, and be sure that the state that's being set up is not a Bantustan and is not a giant prison. Gaza today is probably the world's largest prison. Now they want to expand Gaza to 22% of historic Palestine forever. And that's something we can't allow.
So where is the pressure point to be applied to get Israel to change its policy? Now, there's been talk about a Security Council resolution. Already most of South America has recognized the Palestinian Authority as being a legitimate state in the West Bank.
Or state representatives.
States, thank you. Mm-hmm. Is that enough? Is that something that, I mean, it's not as it is enough, but is that progress? Is that something that will help?
Look, it could help, but the problem is the Palestinians are cursed with a very bad leadership, very weak. And it's not their fault. I mean, we have to remember that Israel for the past 30 years or 40 years or even more has systematically either assassinated or imprisoned the most capable Palestinian leaders. So if you have these weak guys that are really third-rate technocrats and so on, running the show, it's only because the more competent people have been eliminated. So you have a very weak leadership. Now, if the Palestinian leadership would go to the UN, which is what the world, the international community, really wants it to do, everybody except the United States wants them to go to the UN, declare unilaterally a Palestinian state within the 1967 borders, which is, again, a two-state solution. Almost every country in the world would recognize that state. It would become a member of the UN with recognized borders. Then Israel would really be in
Isn't that happening
in
now, in effect?
Situation.
There's a whole segment that's saying we're flying our
that's
flag
right.
now. We have declared ourselves.
That's right. But Abu Mazen, Abbas, said, we are not going to unilaterally declare a Palestinian state. And he even said something worse. He said, a Palestinian state will not emerge without Israel's approval.
So a comprador bourgeoisie, if you will, in the
exactly.
West Bank that
exactly.
does the bidding of the U.S. and sells
exactly.
out Gaza. And so, Jeff, you know,
so that alternative exists, but mm-hmm. they don't have the courage to do it.
You had spoken in some of your mm-hmm. writings, or you'd written about things such as an economic summit, if you will, or within the Middle East. So breaking the log jam. Unfortunately, there are too many people here who don't understand mm-hmm. that it is the Israelis who are the expropriators of the land, who are those people who are the obstructionists. What is to be done? What is a meaningful, viable, at least from your perspective, solution for people who are international advocates of the rights of the Palestinians? Where do we go from here?
Look, it gets complicated. It's not for people that don't know the issue, it gets a little bit abstract. I think we should get away from the idea of one state, two state. What's the solution? I think the solution will emerge. Well, we have to define and insist upon are what are the essential elements of any peace. That if all of them are present, there's a lot of different arrangements that can work. And if any one of them is missing, however good this looks on paper, any solution is going to fail. And I think there has to be a peace that's inclusive of Israelis and Palestinians. There has to be economic viability, which means the Palestinians can't be locked into some Bantustan or economic prison. The right of return of Palestinian refugees has got to be addressed and the right of return accepted. You can't, not everything is a state. You've got four or more million refugees outside whose rights also have to be resolved. I think there has to be security issues for everybody in the region, and any solution has to conform and be based upon international law and UN resolutions and human rights, which the United States has tried to, and Israel, have tried to exclude from the negotiations. And finally, any solution, I believe, has to be regional. I think it has to take into account Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, maybe Egypt. So in other words, if we say, all right, these are the basic conditions for any just peace, these five or six elements, now we have to be sure that they're in place. Now what kind of a solution can we get to? Rather than jumping to a solution that might or might not contain these essential elements. So I think what we're missing today, and certainly what the United States is missing in terms of its trying to mediate, which it doesn't do very well, is an approach to peace, to say what is really essential to a just peace, rather than some technical kind of a solution that leaves these basic issues unresolved.
You mentioned the U.S. has tried to mediate. Has there been... Is it really mediation that they're trying to do, or are they trying to keep the Palestinians in the same situation they've always been in? Has there been any real change in the U.S. policy over the last few years?
Look, I think you have to make a distinction between the administration and Congress. I think, for all our criticism of Obama and the whole administration, I think he does see. And if he doesn't, General Petraeus has told him that this conflict in Israel-Palestine is really messing up American interests. You know, Petraeus complained to the Senate about 6-7 months ago to the Armed Services Committee that the United States can't get on with its struggle to normalize things in Afghanistan and Iraq because the United States is so identified with the Israeli occupation and it doesn't have any trust among Muslims and so on. I think the administration kind of understands that. I think the problem is Congress. I don't care who the president is. Congress, in a bipartisan sense, both parties are absolutely committed to Israel. Israel has become, interestingly enough, a domestic issue in the United States. It's not a foreign issue. And members of Congress feel that they can't be elected unless they're pro-Israel. Whether you have the Jewish constituency in the Democratic Party, and 80% of American Jews vote Democratic and very strategically, fund candidates with AIPAC and so on. Or if you have the Christian fundamentalists in the Republican Party. You know, Sarah Palin used to have in her governor's office in Juneau, Alaska, that has maybe six Jews. She had her desk was framed by an American flag on one side and an Israeli flag on the other side. So the Israeli flag is I don't even know where the flag of Alaska was. So what I'm saying is that Congress will absolutely prevent any administration from taking meaningful steps, which means to pressure Israel. Because the only way you're going to get Israel out of these occupied territories is through pressure. And that pressure is lacking because Congress will not allow any administration to apply the pressure necessary. What's going to happen, I think, just one more thought, and what is happening, because you mentioned Latin American countries, Europe is starting to move, Turkey, the Muslim world and so on, even China. I think the United States is liable to be left in the dust. And
what
the good news is that the rest of the world might start acting, and the hell with the United States. It'll be left isolated. And I think the Americans don't understand how much their stance on this conflict is isolating them in general internationally.
Well, as part of that, is there any
possibility of the implosion, if you will, of Israel itself. Israel is beginning to be more repressive to its peace activists.
Right.
There are people who have been jailed, etc. But is with that, is there really a peace movement now that is growing, that is capable of really nurturing the seeds of dissent to give those other elements in the international community an opportunity to become the real advocates of Palestinian statehood and Palestinian autonomy and existence and reclamation, for that matter, of its own history?
No, I think so. I think the The Israeli Jewish public is completely passive. I mean, you say imploding. Actually, Israel's doing very well.
Economically,
mm-hmm. Internationally, even in a sense, even with some criticism here and there. Its international status improves all the time. It's becoming a full member of NATO slowly. You know, it has tremendous military and political and financial support from the United States. I mean, Israel really sees itself in a great situation, in a sense. But there is a peace movement that's strong but small. We're not going to convince the Israeli public that peace is a good thing, because I think they're living a good life, they're insulated, and they really don't care. But what we are doing is working internationally with literally thousands of organizations all over the world. That I believe in my travels, I sense that the Palestine issue has become one of the two or three major world issues everywhere in the world. I was just in Seoul, South Korea last year. 50,000 people came out for a pro-Palestine demonstration. I think this has become kind of the symbol of American power, illegitimate power in the world. It's become the symbol of neo-imperialism. And the Palestinians are seen as this people, this little grain of sand that's gumming up the machine or blocking the machine, preventing because it's able to mobilize the civil society, the peoples all over the world, preventing Israel and the United States from having its way. And I think a lot of peoples, especially in the Middle East, put a lot of their faith in the Palestinian ability to resist. That's why it's so serious that their leadership is so collaborative. But I think in the end, this is beginning to assume the dimensions of the anti-apartheid struggle. And that's our hope. The international community, the people, are not going to let this go. The BDS movement of boycotts, divestments, and sanctions is growing exponentially all over the world. And I really think this is really going to be a case, like with South Africa, where the people force the governments in the end to bring about a just resolution of the conflict.
And how do we support your travels, your organization, which is a critical component mm-hmm. of just that, which is supporting a free, free Palestine?
One of the things is to help us get the message out. We need to be in more newspapers. We need to be more media. We need to get out. I mean, I would love to be able to speak in the Jewish community that's close to me. I think that your listeners and other people, by giving us, me, other Israeli activists and Palestinian activists more access to the microphones and newspapers and the media, I think our message is very powerful. But it hasn't penetrated yet, certainly into the mainstream. And you can always look at our website, which is www.icahd.org, for a lot of information, a lot of ideas, campaigns, and things that could be done.
We have an obligation and responsibility because this country has a critical role to play, and it has negatively, right. And we've got to do some reversal of that. Let's tell people the truth. How can people contact you? And Jeff?
Yeah, I can write, and I can be in touch by telephone. And the best thing is to be in touch with me by email, if you want, which is Jeff@ICAHD.org, and I'd be happy to respond. And I think it's really important, that people help give us access to the mainstream.
And give us that email one more time.
Jeff@ICAHD ICADS.org.
And the name of your book, which is great and people should read it, is?
The name of my book that you don't find in bookstores, but you can order, is called An Israeli in Palestine.
I am telling you, when you listen to Jeff, he really opens up ideas and thoughts and a conceptual and ideological framework for really looking at what we can do and what a meaningful and just peace could be about, and getting away from this argumentative, the one state, the two state, is there a contiguous land? And there's a lot to learn from my brother here. Jeff Halper, it is a pleasure to have you with us, and we have to work a lot harder, which our listeners are used to doing, to make sure there is a free, free Palestine. Get the book, contact Jeff, because we have to spread the word and break through the media barrier and bigotry and the AIPAC lobby, frankly.
And one more little thing, come. I think that if you come to Israel-Palestine, it takes 20 minutes to get it. You see the occupation, you understand it, and if you can get your member of Congress to come, or be sure your member of Congress, because Israel brings over all members of Congress and gives them this brainwashing. If you can say to your member of Congress, I want you to contact the Israeli peace movement, and I want to be sure you talk to Palestinians and go into the occupied territories when you go, that would be a tremendous thing.
Absolutely. And you can also do some work there with Jeff on preventing the house demolitions and rebuilding.
And rebuilding.
A lot of Jeff Halper. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you very much. And come, yeah, come build.
We're going to come.
Okay.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.